Hey, hey, hey! Welcome to episode 2, JRR, you Tolkien to me podcast. Jude, are you Tolkien to me?
Oh, I am Martin to you all the way. Damn it.
You blew it. Okay, so we are back to discuss the deep dive we just did into the second episode, and I liked it. It was fun. It's long. There's lots of plot points that happen, so we're just going to jump right into it and then maybe get into a little bit of detailed conversation in the process. We start off in Galadriel is swimming in the sea. She is swimming towards Middle Earth. And then we cut to Nori and Poppy. And they are at Meteor Man's meteor site. And they fall into the pit, Jude.
They go deep into that pit.
And what happens? Do they get hurt? Do they get burnt? Do they suffer grievous injuries in the fiery-looking pit?
The fire and the glowing embers do not burn them.
Right. And then she's reaching out to the meteor-looking dude, the wizard, possibly. And he's having convulsions, and his convulsions are causing levitation all around him. And he looks like he's hanging on to the ground for dear life. It's like Jude on a drunken night.
I have never been with a knight in my life.
No. Yowza. So anyway, the flames go up and then they go out and he passes out. And then they go and they get a wheelbarrow and they put the old man in the wheelbarrow and they sneak him back past Sadak and they grab some lanterns while he's not, like, they make a little decoy noise.
They're little thieves.
And they put him in there, but then somewhere along the way they lose control and it goes into a ditch. And they decide that the ditch seems, I think they leave him, they maybe prop him up or something, but they leave him in that little area, that little pit, because it seems safe to her.
Well, you know, he does look a bit like a guy I saw on the train once. So, you know, I think the ditch is probably a good place for him.
It's nice. It's nice. We have rooms here, or maybe ditch in the back for you. You look like a ditch guy. Nori says that she feels responsible for him and is destined to take care of him or to take him wherever he needs to go. He's very important in this world. And it's her mission from God, maybe. That's how she feels. What do you feel, Jude? What's your mission besides fucking being late everywhere you go and taking long craps due to eating Mexican food?
Well,
Are you like Nori? Do you have a purpose?
I honestly kind of felt that was my mission.
Do you have a purpose?
Not much. Not much, no. Yeah. Oh, my God, I personally try to avoid having a mission.
Yeah, well, you should. Know,
I think when you look for a mission, then work finds you.
And, yeah.
When you avoid
mission,
it.
You mean job. All right, so anyway, we're going to...
I mean anything which induces physical labor.
Yes. So anyway, I'm going to now pronounce this town right, because I didn't in the first one. And you know what? Get over it, because I didn't. It's called Hordern. Hordern.
Who are you calling a whore?
Dern.
Damn it, Dern.
Dern is a whore. So Hordern, Arondir and Bronwyn are exploring the burnt-out remains of Hordern. Hordern.
Hordern.
Hordern it.
Sounds a little like a hiccup. Hordern.
Hordern it. And there are no... It's an old man. There are no bodies to be found, and they find tunnels, and they were not tunnels dug by men, according to Bronwyn.
No men had dug these tunnels. Jude.
So,
fucking dwarves.
Anything? No, they were obviously these little, maybe, I don't know, orc troll? What is that thing? It's claw-y.
It's a bit
It's unlike any orc that I've seen in the Jacksonian universe.
Or here. Because we did see a bunch of them early on in that battle scene. And it doesn't look anything like them. For one, it's got facial hair, which I believe orcs should not have.
You know, canonically. It's the new trend. All the kids have beards now. All the orcs have beards. I don't know what that thing is, but it's kind of a cool design. It's it looks to me kind of like a goblin, and you keep on going, no, it can't be. But they could have two different things in this world. Peter Jackson did it.
Well, even Peter Jackson explained in The Hobbit that the goblins were orcs.
I know.
You know, according to him, it's just that the Moria orcs were a little bit different.
Okay.
That was extremely
different.
Yeah, it does. But that was his in-universe explanation. They seem to have
like a completely different set of size, not only size, but just
again,
like
that,
features and abilities. Anyway,
I'm unfortunately not Peter Jackson, but
it doesn't.
I'm explaining that was his in-universe explanation, and according to Tolkien, they are one and the same, orcs and goblins.
Okay.
So,
well, I can. But this
now,
is something
now, if
else,
it's some
so.
Sort of a troll, a small troll,
yes,
or some sort of a crossbreed, or perhaps a result of magic,
mm-hmm.
We definitely have a number of possibilities on the board.
Yep. So anyway, next scene we're in a Region. A Region is this beautiful elven city. It's where the Celebrimbor presides over this area.
Lord Celebrimbor.
Lord. That's Lord Celebrimbor to you, bitches. So he is talking to Elrond, and they're talking about Morgoth and the Silmarils. He shows him Feanor's hammer, and they talk lovingly about the Silmarils and about how they were so beautiful and they had so much of the light of the trees in them that when Morgoth stared into them, he stared into them for weeks until he saw a reflection of his own evilness in a tear that ran from his eye and he was snapped out of it. So,
sounds like romantic propaganda to me, though.
Yeah. But, or it's actually very reminiscent of the Narcissus tale. He was, except kind of the opposite. Narcissus was entranced by his own beauty. Morgoth is snapped out of his trance by his own evil ugliness. But he's entranced by the beauty of the Silmarils that he could never have. He was always jealous of beings that had the light.
He couldn't even hold them.
Right, they burned him.
Which is why he had to put them in the crown.
So, then Celebrimbor says he almost turned Morgoth's heart. So he almost made Morgoth good? And also, were the Silmarils really more beautiful than the trees themselves? Because Morgoth, along with Ungoliant, laid waste to those. So it's a... That may differ from the books.
Yes, he cut into the trees, but he did not kill them. We don't know if he would have, but he didn't kill them. All he did was cut into them. It was Ungoliant that drained the life out of them.
And poisoned them and drained the light. So he says, true creation requires sacrifice. Sometimes you got to work with the devil if you want to make some good goddamn rings.
Not incorrect.
That's what he's saying there. I think that's what he said there.
Rob, do you feel that at this point that Sauron has already worked with Celebrimbor, or do you feel that it's coming?
No, I think you're right. But you said before that you think that they've already. I think they have already made him, and he's ready to make the three, and he suspects Annatar to be that. But that's what I think. I think that's where we're at plot-wise.
What I said as well.
But, it's not a spoiler. It's just a possible speculation. We don't know nothing. Is there, so Celebrimbor, he needs to build a huge tower and the most powerful forge ever, and he needs Elrond to figure out just how he could, you know, he really wanted the largest workforce in the world, but instead he just got Elrond.
Well, you
that
know,
big brain. Check out the big brain on Elrond.
Hey, sometimes you gotta take what you're given.
And so, but Elrond's got an idea. He's gonna make an alliance with the dwarves, maybe.
Clever.
And then, you know, they're great craftsmen. And Celebrimbor thinks so, too. He likes the dwarves' craftsmanship. He respects them. So next we're at Khazad Dûm. I don't think Khazad Dûm is very far. The Misty Mountains are too far from Eregion. But
yeah, we're not told just how long it takes
don't
them
know
to
how
get
long.
There, but
no.
It is.
They Ubered to the Misty Mountains, and they're outside the Misty Mountains, and they're trying to get in, and Elrond says, no problem. I know Prince Doran.
I know people.
He's going to be like his trumpets and whatever. He's going to give us some of that good dwarf stuff that they got in the basement.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Yeah, and nope, he's not. He's pissed. So he's going to have to...
he's like, go fuck yourselves and your mother.
Exactly. And he's going to have to invoke the right of Sigin Taras. And that's a fancy way of saying, I smash it a rock.
Yes, it's actually a word which translates to Longbeards, which is the name for the people of the Misty Mountains. The dwarves of the Misty Mountains are the Longbeards. And this is the right of them, which is not Tolkien canon necessarily, but it makes sense within the show.
It's a smash it to rock.
It's a smash it to rock.
All right. So we get inside the mountain, we see Khazad Dûm. And it's beautiful.
And impressive.
I love it. I love Khazad Dûm. I don't know. I would love to live there. It's not dark. It's not dank.
A little hard to get a suntan.
But, you know.
A little tough to get a tan. But otherwise,
it's worthy. It's a worthy destination for,
yeah,
for your travel. So Doran the Fourth explains to Elrond that if he loses the competition against Doran the Fourth, he is going to be banished forever. And then they do a little rock smash.
Yep. Elrond accepts the terms.
Yes. And then they start doing a little rock smash. I love Doran the Fourth. It's bringing back the Gimli vibes all the way.
He's a fun character so far.
We've got good Gimli vibes. We got, if you like that sort of thing, I don't know. Maybe you hate Gimli. So anyway, Nori. We're back with Nori, and she's checking on the old man, and he's staring at some, it looks to me like some scratches in the dirt. I don't know if he made them or he's just staring at them. And then she kind of startles him. She surprises him, and then as he gets excited, there's this cloud of darkness, and there's wind, and there's this weird speech. I don't know if it's dark speech. That's a little passing truck. There's this low undertone of speech, and the wind is dark, and it's kind of ominous, and then it dies down as he relaxes, and he doesn't remember how to speak. He certainly doesn't remember his name. He starts just eating the chestnuts with the shell still on, but he's got a powerful jaw there, man. He's cracking them chestnuts.
Swallowing it whole.
You're crunching them.
He's swallowing it whole.
And then he says,
she goes,
are there any others? And he says, mana, mana, ore, ore, which was a big hit in the 60s.
Reached number 2 on the billboards.
And Jude, you want to tell us about that?
Yes. Well, that is Elvish and translates to what is heat?
It
what
sounds like,
is heat?
You know what? That sounds like a David Byrne lyric. Or James Brown, oddly enough. Ha! What is the heat? What is the heat?
Womp, womp.
What is the heat? So, yeah, that's cool. that he's saying that. That's interesting.
We don't have any idea what that means yet. But
I really wanted to burn you back then.
And incidentally, for those translations and what have you, we need to take a quick break here and shout out Rowan, who is still no longer with. He's still not with us.
He's dead.
He's still around, but he is not with us at the moment. And if you're wondering why, go back to episode one and you will get the answer to that. We've recorded this on the same day.
Yeah. So anyway, Nori's father, and all the while this is sort of juxtaposed to this other scene where Nori's father is helping them leverage something as they're... I'm not sure. Are they getting ready for the migration? They're doing some kind of work, and he really snaps his ankle pretty bad.
It does not look like a whole lot of fun.
Oh no! But he seems to be okay. He's putting on a brave face, but he's kind of giggling.
Yeah, he's cracking jokes.
I don't know. They got him on some good some of that hobbit weed. That's not. I mean, it's.
I think they gave him some hobbit opium.
Yeah, they had milk of the poppy. They just don't say it.
Yes.
You got to read between the lines, people. They got some milk of the poppy there just as much as the Game of Thrones, except they just don't tell you about it.
This is more of an L. Frank Baum type of situation.
So, and the others show concern when Nori, she rushes back there, and she feels guilty for not being there. And then she says, the others, as soon as she gets out from there, what's going to happen about the migration? So these are migratory folk, and the migration is a big deal to them. And they are worried for their compadre. So now we're back. Guess who's swimming again? It's Galadriel.
She does a lot of swimming.
That's how she keeps in shape.
She puts Michael Phelps to shame.
She's thousands of years old, and she's looking great. So there's a dark cloud, and we don't know what's coming through that dark cloud, do we, Jude? But what is it? It's the ruins of a ship. And there are five people on it, and some of them are nice and friendly, and some of them, they don't want her on the ship. And why is she there? They wonder. Well, she's swimming in the middle of the sea. You don't normally do that.
Well, they do pull her out of the water, first of all. So
they do, but half of them don't want to.
But I'm saying, you know, yay on them for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's in the water, Jude?
I'm guessing it's a sea dragon.
You know what? You must have been watching the same show as me.
No.
Because there's a sea dragon.
The hell you say?
And they don't like, but still, they don't like the fact that she's an elf. They see the pointy ears. What? Why were you hiding your elfiness?
I'll tell you what else she's hiding. Well, when she comes out of the water in that sheer gown.
You can't see
it. You cannot see a damn thing. Nope. And that is a crime against nature.
This is your mama's Galadriel. You're not, Jude, get over it, all right?
I'm a little bitter. Just a little bit bitter about this.
Hot D is on Sunday night, Jude, for you. And also, by the way, House of the Dragon is on.
Well, thank you for both of those pieces of information.
So, we know Hot D means a lot to Jude. And to me, too.
Like a ton.
A very
big amount.
So they, come on.
Huge.
I'm sorry, people. I'm sorry.
Girthy, in fact.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
He's bad. He's a bad person. He's bad at entertaining.
Well, this is true.
Hal Brand is on the ship. He's a dude. He's got a little bit of an attitude. They're attacked by the sea dragon, and someone on the ship pushes her off the ship. They're not very nice.
Pretty douchey.
And she almost gets eaten. And only she and Halbrand remain at the end.
And you said I was the one being sexual.
Hey, you know what? Stop it. And so anyway, she and Halbrand, I apologize, people. He can't help himself. He's got things.
It's kind of like Tourette's.
Only she and Halbrand are the remaining survivors of the sea dragon incident. And he comes back through the fog on the ship, and they ask her his name. He asks her her name. They introduce themselves. They're having a little bit of a moment of civility and calm. And now, all of a sudden, we're at Khazad Dûm, because that's where we have to go. Smashy, smashy continues. In the news, the smashing continues at Khazad Dûm. Elrond gives up. His hammer breaks. You know, I think Elrond had a few more rounds in him. But Doran dunks on him hard. He just slammed, dunks it. He's like, "Fat elf, you piece of garbage."
And being
that's how he talks now. "You piece of garbage, you elf. I've got a transatlantic accident now." Accident? Come on. What? Come on. Accent.
Where'd you go with that one?
Look, are you not entertained, people? So, no. You know what he says to him, Jude? Can I tell you what he says?
Because
I write down the stuff. He says, "A dog may bark at the moon, but he cannot bring it down." That's how he's like, "You think you're good at cracking rocks? I am the moon of cracking rocks. All right? I am the rock crack moon." So, Doran the Fourth, he is. He's taking him back to the surface in the some sort of elevation platform that the dwarves have rigged up.
It's really just a straight up elevator. I gotta be honest with you on that one. It's
and they're talking. They're talking, and Doran is he's hurt by Elrond's missing his wedding and the birth of his children, and you know, 20 years for an elf.
It's like a long yawn.
For a dwarf, it's a long time. You should have been in touch. You didn't call. You didn't write. You could have texted me. Just send a text.
Send a gift? Nothing.
No. And he blames him for being a bad friend, sort of. Because you know why, Jude? Because you know why?
Oh, I know why.
Because really what it was all about was the friends we made along the way.
And those friends, in this instance, is, I believe, a little bit more than friendship.
Yeah, well, you say that a lot.
Here we go, people. We've watched it three times now.
Here we go. They were lovers. Let's just agree with him. Let's just agree with Jude and say they were making sweet.
They
sweet
fucked.
Ass oh, okay. Can we? No, so no. Can we just agree and move on?
That we okay, have it look, over with. Look, all I'm saying is I feel there's a ton of subtext in this scene and in the ones coming up.
Fancy pants up your in the nonsense.
In the ones coming up, and I'm not making a Tolkien. Pun on you know on
this
that.
This is Tolkien.
Well, this is not Tolkien. This is some showrunners like creating.
Tolkien doesn't write sex.
Creating. He blames, a show based on Tolkien.
So Elrond apologizes. Stuff. I'm not going into it. Elrond apologizes. He meets Disa and Doran the Fourth's wife, and she's very happy to meet him, and she instantly loves him, and she wants him to stay for dinner, and Doran, no, he should stay, and they meets the kids, and they stay for dinner, and...
I feel Doran told Disa about, you know, their little affair.
Yeah, and Disa, she's into it. And
she's totally into it. She's cool about it. She's like,
Disa talks about singing to the mountain, to the stone walls of the mountain, when the dwarves introduce themselves in the mountain, and the mountain opens up its secrets to it. So that gets a little bit deeper.
That sounds sexual, too.
About the dwarves, you know? I think this is important in the development of the dwarves' mythology, because we kind of saw them as, you know, a little bit of a clownish troupe in The Hobbit, and Gimli in Lord of the Rings is sort of a comic relief Falstaffian figure, in a sense. He kicks ass.
They're fairly one-dimensional.
Right, and here we have a lot of dimension to that, a lot of more wisdom than just the gruff exterior. Because you know what? Dwarves are like onions, Jude.
You mean when you...
This joke's not going to... It's not going to be good. Elrond brings up... So Elrond finally tells Doran why he's there. And that he's on a mission, I guess, to get a workforce for Celebrimbor. That's what they didn't overtly say it. I mean, I guess they said it. He gets mad, and he starts snapping at him. And Elrond notices the tree. He gave him a sapling, and Doran's been growing it lovingly. So I think he realizes
it kind of represents,
he kind of turns it around.
It kind of represents the child they couldn't have.
Okay, Jude. I'm sure everybody is enjoying that at this point. So now we're back in the sea, and Galadriel and Halbrand are on the wreckage of the ship. They're floating around, and Halbrand tells her that orcs overran his little home, and he says it's ashes now, so we can maybe deduce that he is from, what is it called again?
Whore place.
You know, whore place. It's right. It's like the Bangkok of Middle Earth. It's just a little less creative. Whore place. Okay, so we're thinking that Halbrand may be from Hordern, as that's the place that just burned down, or someplace similar. He's from the Southlands, so that's where that is. And he's got his own plans. He doesn't want to be... She wants to go and kick Sauron's ass. She's like, Sauron's behind this. He sent the orcs there, or whatever they are. And we should go back there, and you should take me there, and I should look for Sauron. And he says, I got my own plans. I'm on a raft in the middle of nowhere.
Run away.
But I got plans.
Run away.
And Bronwyn tells Waldrig, the barkeeper, that the whole town is dead, meaning the town of that town that I can never remember the name of that I just said.
Hordern, is it?
Whorebrand?
Whorebrand.
Which brand is the best brand? It's Whorebrand.
It does open up the best.
Hordern. God damn it.
We knew that. Everyone knew that.
Bronwyn has news. She tells him that the whole town is dead, about the orc tunnels, and they're digging towards them, and he's not convinced. He's a dick.
A little bit.
Waldrig. Let's name our baby Waldrig. So he wants
proof. I'm just waiting for the Amazon book, Where's Waldrig, to come out.
He wants proof. He doesn't want those elves back up his butt. It's no big deal. It's probably some sinkhole. Right, what you got there is a sinkhole. It's not. There's no orcs involved in that situation.
It happens.
And then Theo, back at the homestead in the place where Bronwyn lives, Theo starts hitting the floorboards, and he thinks it's mice. And then, you know, he's making a hole.
Yeah, by the way, am I the only one who just kind of wants to see this kid be beaten?
Yes.
I am?
Yes.
Oh, I
but you want to see a lot of kids get beaten. It's not healthy or normal.
Shh, don't tell people.
So now we're back. Arondir is in the tunnel. Now, I guess he's tunneling back. He wants to see where it goes from town that shall be unnamed. And and he finds a claw.
Yes, along with
Hordern.
He finds a claw along with a bunch of scratch marks along the walls of this tiny tunnel, which...
It's very claustrophobic.
Yes, it's basically a gopher hole.
Yeah,
like big enough. For
and then some a kind of orc kind of things. He sees in front, and rats are going past him, and he goes through an underground channel of water, and he gets to the surface, and then he's grabbed from behind by a bunch of hands.
And that's and the last we see
orc-y.
Of him.
He's gonna be okay. So he's got the armor of Plotnish. Bronwyn now finds the hole in her floor.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that.
Something is in there. Something's infiltrated. Theo's hiding in like a closet or something, or a wall. And Bronwyn hides. And then a nasty orc-looking kind of thing. We don't even know what it is yet because we haven't seen this design yet. Comes out from the hole. And they fight with the thing, and they stab it, and they hang it, and they stab it again, and then It's fighting back. It's strong, and it is nasty.
There's a lot of talk of stabbing in holes.
Yep.
Just have to point that out right now.
And so now we're back to Galadriel and Halbrand. Galadriel, goddammit. I told you it's Galadriel. You keep messing it up. And Halbrand. And they're being thrashed around by a storm at sea. And she falls in. And luckily there's a rope attached. And he can get it down there and save her. He jumps back in and saves her. And then they're back on the wreckage of the raft.
Wreckage never looks so good.
You know, it's what, you know, when you need when you need something to float on, I recommend raft wreckage.
It's better than a fucking door.
It's better than a door. Raft wreckage. So now we're back to the old man. He's staring at the sky. And Nori and Poppy come to tell the old man something about the migration is going to happen. I think they might have been low on supplies or something like that. And he uses fireflies from the lantern. He whispers he can talk to the fireflies. And he starts painting constellations with the fireflies. And Nori believes that he wants her to find the stars that he's positioning into place with the fireflies. These particular constellations go to where we can see those. And at the very end, he's on his knees and he's got a pained look on his face. And I know Jude can definitely relate to that. Oh, I made a dirty joke.
Wait, that was a joke?
No. So, now, Doran the Third, he's a talking to Doran the Fourth. And he's vouching for Elrond. And Doran the Fourth is trying to leverage the situation because he don't like the elves as much. I mean, Thorin the Third is trying to leverage the situation because he doesn't like elves as much as Doran the Fourth. And Doran, we find out he's known Elrond for 50 years. But Doran the Third is not hearing it. He says, there can be no trust between hammer and rock. Who's the hammer and who's the rock, Jude?
Oh, and you didn't want me going there.
You know, when, you know, to a hammer, everything seems like a nail, Jude.
You're not making it any better.
So he's talking about dwarves and elves, Jude. And so he doesn't trust them. He wants to leverage the situation. I think he wants to make some bling bling. So now Theo takes out the blade, the shard of the blade that he was looking for that has the mark of Sauron. And the blade now flames up. It goes aflame. And then it goes out again. And he takes it. He and Bronwyn are leaving the town. And he's taking that blade. And the whole village is leaving. We see them off in the distance. And then we get back to Galadriel and Halbrand, and we see a shadow cast over their wreckage raft, and they're asleep. And they wake to see that there is a ship above them. End scene. End episode. So that's the entire episode. Any further comments, Mr. Jude?
Absolutely. Well, number one, I think we should speculate on who Mr. Meteor Man is.
To me, he's an Istari. He is a blue wizard. They came during the Second Age. They came as fully developed old men, but that were sturdy and strong. And they don't know who they are at first. I think that is the best educated guess, but it could be a host of other possibilities. I don't think it's Sauron, although they keep red herring us the Sauron thing. That's not who he is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misdirect going on there.
Yeah, although everything at the end sort of indicates that the leaf was at the end of the first episode.
Yes.
And all that stuff happened, and the fact that it kind of looked like the Eye of Sauron. But that could be just meant as this is who your mission is to deal with. We don't, and this is the symbol that you're looking for, maybe a first signal. Maybe that's what he's looking for in, when he's looking at these carvings and the scratchings. He seems to be a benevolent figure that can't control its energy yet. He's like a an infant with powers.
Yeah, I'm also leaning towards one of the blue wizards. Personally, I think the most likely contender is Altar, or how would you pronounce it? Morinithar?
I don't know.
I believe is his name, which translates to the Darkness Slayer.
That's cool.
Not
the Freshmaker?
Unfortunately. I feel that would be a better foe for Sauron, but, you know, you gotta, once again, you gotta take
Mentos. Sauron always feared Mentos.
But yeah, the Blue Wizards do not conflict with the Tolkien lore. Coming down specifically, like in the Second Age, or the way it's written is around 1600, which is right before Sauron made the One Ring.
Right.
So that lines up pretty perfectly. We haven't been given a year of where we're at in the show,
right,
but that lines up, or it seems to line up pretty perfectly with where the show seems to be heading.
Right, right. And I think it's interesting that we have a common theme of sacrifice in the show, where Galadriel sacrificed her eternal paradise, and Celebrimbor has sacrificed something that he hasn't named. But he said that line about, you know, things of great beauty can't be made without sacrifice. I think that's an interesting point. I also think that it's interesting to see Elrond look at his craft as being a statesman, because he tells Celebrimbor, you know, you work on your craft and let me work on mine in terms of dealing with the dwarves. I never saw that side of Elrond necessarily.
Which, as somebody who is eventually going to become a leader of his people, that does make sense when you think about it in those terms.
Right. Right. And also, it looks like I can now see the way they're going to weave these various plot points together, at least for the period of time that you're talking about, where they're going to end up, Sauron is about to forge that ring, Celebrimbor wants to make the three, which takes years also, by the way. I'm sure they're going to compress that.
Yes.
Sauron is going to want the rings back, he's going to attack, we're going to end up with that battle, and Dorin isn't going to be necessary to flank him and help the elves. That seems to me how it looks like it's shaping up in terms of book to lore, screen to lore. It looks like that's how they're dealing with it. There's going to be, I hope, a lot of flashbacks into the First Age, because that knowledge is foundational. The stories are great. The set pieces could be huge, because we have Morgoth assailing these elves with great force. We're going to need to see some Balrogs.
And really, for the budget of the show so far, in the first two episodes, the only major set piece we've gotten was during the prologue with the battle scene, that one battle scene that involved the dragons and the orcs and the elves and the eagles. But we haven't really had any other spectacular battle scenes or breathtaking
I think we got some battle scenes going on outside. I think people are celebrating the long weekend with some fireworks around here. But it's okay.
But
we're in the first stage.
Yeah. Anyway, other than that, I know you and I, Rob, had discussed a little bit of casting that we had some thoughts on, specifically regarding Celebrimbor.
Celebrimbor, we both feel like he should be a bit more robust, maybe younger, looking more like the art that we've seen of Celebrimbor.
Yeah, nothing against the actor.
No, the actor's fine. I just feel like that's a different dude. I'm like looking at someone else. The Noldor are very physical, like Galadriel is. And I very can't imagine...
And very fair, I believe the fairest of the elves even, right. And all elves
no,
are...
No, that would be the Vanyar.
Oh, okay. Well, but still, like, they should be... have a level of, quote-unquote, fair appearance that the actor, once again, does not seem to possess in that sense.
Well, he's a fine-looking gentleman, just not the one that we envision, so yes. Replace him, please. Okay, so...
Yeah, it's not a big ask.
Anyway, I think now that we've gotten back into the Tolkien groove, we're grooving on. So we're gonna wrap it up. And Jude, you got any shout outs, any thank yous, any suggestions for the listeners?
Well, as always, please if you like what we've done here, please like, subscribe, share, and help spread the fellowship.
Help spread the fellowship. And with that, we will bid you a fond adieu. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.